now on Wake Up Australia. A dose of common sense.
Common sense never goes out of style.
From the other side of the world with Brendan O'Neill, editor of Spiked Online.
There is plenty happening in the UK this week. Brendan joins us from London, the editor of Spiked Online. G'day, mate.
Hey, Clinton. How's it going?
I'm good. Your council elections have been held and the London mayor, Sadiq Khan, has been returned.
Yes, he has. Unfortunately, in my view, I don't think he's a very good mayor. He's been returned for an unprecedented third term. This is the first London mayor to get three terms. You know, it's democracy. That's how it works. You know, my side lost and his side won, and I understand that. But the thing is, I think he's a problematic mayor. He hasn't done particularly well for this city. He hasn't done much to tackle violent crime, especially knife crime. He hasn't done the house building that he promised to do, and London is very speedily running out of places for people to live. He doesn't really treat Londoners with much respect. I think he's always lecturing us and pointing his finger at us and you know, telling us how to behave and what to do. And of course, he brought in this climate change charge that everyone who owns an old car now has to pay £12.50 a day to drive their car. So that means a single mum with four kids who wants to drop them off at school, she has to pay £12.50. The dad who wants to drive to the supermarket and get the weekly shop, he has to pay £12.50. So he did a lot of things that I think were not good for this city. But somehow he got back in and he's going to be there for another 4 years.
And, you know, £12.50, that's about 20 of our dollars, which is, you know, roughly what a lot of Sydneysiders pay for tolls, mind you. But that's a massive hit to the budget.
It's a huge hit for the budget. And it's really interesting, if you look at the breakdown of which Londoners voted for Sadiq. I mean, London is such a vast city. It's so huge.
Of course. That
you know, you have to break down where he got votes and where he didn't get votes. So he did very well in central London, which is where richer people tend to live, the upper middle classes who probably don't drive their cars because they're right in the center of city. Mm. They might ride a bike, or they might get a bus, or they might get driven around by their own private vehicles. So they don't worry about those kinds of charges, and they don't particularly have to worry about violent crime either, because they live in very nice communities. But on the suburbs of London, on the outskirts of London, where people have to drive every day because they travel long distances, they tended not to vote for Sadiq. The numbers of people who voted against him in those parts of London were much larger. So there's a very interesting class breakdown, a geographical breakdown, even a generational breakdown. Older people tended not to vote for him and younger people tended to vote for him. So it might look like a stunning victory for Sadiq, but under the surface, there's lots of different tensions going on.
And we just have so much in common. You mentioned that one of the major failings of Sadiq Khan has been handling knife crime. The biggest issue in Sydney in the past 3 weeks has been knife crime.
Of course, absolutely. And it's been a huge issue here as well. And, you know, Sadiq Khan did this, what I consider to be a pretty atrocious thing. He was debating Susan Hall, who was the Tory candidate to be the mayor of London. She wasn't particularly good, unfortunately, but she did her best. They were having a television debate and she said there are gangs in London with machetes going around committing crimes. And he laughed at her and said, you should stop watching The Wire. And then a few days after he made that very dismissive comment, a man with a machete went around London attacking people and killed a 14-year-old boy. So you could not ask for better proof of how out of touch Sadiq Khan and his administration is with ordinary Londoners and ordinary Londoners' concerns than the fact that he was making fun of his opponent for talking about knife crime just a few days before one of the worst knife crimes took place. So I feel like we're ruled by a political class that doesn't understand our concerns, what we're worried about, what we want to have done. And Sadiq Khan really sums that up.
We've been following the reports of Prince Harry returning to London but not meeting with his father. What's the reaction been like to that revelation?
Huge reaction here. Front pages of all the papers virtually. People still talking about the rift in the royal family between Harry and William, Harry and Charles. You know, the more rational side of me thinks it's actually quite hard to meet the king, even if you are his son. You know, the king is a difficult person to set up a meeting with. He's very busy. His diary is controlled by a whole team of people. So that might be one of the explanations for why this didn't take place. But more broadly, we have to bear in mind that Prince Harry did actually stab his family in the back a little bit, especially with his memoir, where he gave all sorts of private details about conversations that he had with his father, his view on Camilla, his arguments with Prince William, Meghan's arguments with Princess Catherine. You know, it's so interesting that Prince Harry goes on all the time about his right to privacy, and yet he is willing to invade the privacy of his own family by spilling all the kind of gory details of their rifts and their arguments. So I wouldn't be surprised if, on top of the fact that it's quite hard to set up a meeting with the king might not necessarily want to meet Harry just yet, given all the revelations that Harry has put into the public realm.
Yesterday, the US President Joe Biden told Israel that the US will stop supplying the Israeli army with weapons if they move into Rafah. And David Cameron has also spoken out now.
Yeah, I find this really quite unsettling, actually. So it seems pretty clear, I mean, all the evidence is there, that Hamas has pretty much decamped to Rafah in the south of Gaza. That's where lots of its terrorists are. That's where they are firing rockets into Israel. That's where they fired rockets that have actually killed IDF soldiers. Lots of people think that the hostages are there in the tunnels in Rafah. And yet you have Joe Biden, David Cameron, the whole kind of left-wing press and the mainstream media saying to Israel, don't go into Rafah. Don't go anywhere near this place. It will be a bloodbath if you do. You know, we have to be honest about what these people are really saying, which is that they're saying to Israel, leave Rafah alone. Leave Hamas alone. Let them use this city as a terror base, which is what Hamas is currently doing. So it's presented to us as a pro-peace position. But in some ways, I think it's the antithesis of peace, because it's basically an argument for allowing Hamas to continue using Rafah as a base from which to plan its assaults on Jewish people and the people of Israel. So it's a complicated issue, no question. But I think we have to be serious about the fact that no other state on earth would be expected to have a terror city on its border. And I don't see why we should expect that of Israel.
Yeah, we'll be watching that closely over the next couple of days. Brendan, we'll catch up again next week.
Cheers. Thank you.
Brendan O'Neill, the editor of Spiked Online, 131 873, our number.